listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Today, LA Talk Radio and Your Ultimate Life. You know, I love bringing people on who have novel, interesting, and powerful ideas to add good to the world. And I'm grateful to have today a special guest with me, Trish Wilkinson. She is magic in bringing sanity and fun back into education. So welcome to the show, Trish.
Hi, I'm really excited to be here because, as you know, this is my favorite topic.
It is, frankly, almost the only topic I've heard you talk about, and you do it really well, and you have something really valuable to offer. So I'm excited to have you here with this live show. We did a podcast recording a little while ago that'll be out in a few weeks. But this is good, and it's a different audience today. So I picked this funny background on purpose because I had a bunch of people in it, you know, and some of them look young and some of them don't, but that's okay. So tell me what it is that you do.
Basically, what I do is I help administrators and teachers and homeschooling parents restore joy in education for both themselves and for their students. Because, you know, we've been lacking a little joy in our education here and recreating students' learning for today's world, you know, in the digital world, because we've been doing the same kind of stuff for a very long time and it's hard to change it. And we're kind of grasping at straws and adding all these curriculums and all these kind of things that we're doing. And it turns out I kind of discovered by accident that there are five brain-friendly.
So before you go there, I'm going to break a little piece down because you're tying a lot of things together. So the first thing you said is you're going to restore joy in the schools, in education for both the teachers and the students. Now that right there is a really, and you're getting into the how, and we'll do that in a minute, but you're restoring joy in education. Why did we lose that? I remember as a kid really liking going to school, and my experience with school, the school itself was fun. And so where did we lose that joy? What happened?
I think a lot of things in society changed, and a lot of things changed with the whole explosion of people using smartphones. So people using smartphones and all the electronics. And I'm not even a person who feels negatively about those things. But what happened was it started creating all of these, you know, like a lot of kids were suffering from anxiety and depression from social media and getting addicted to the dopamine rush from playing video games and all these kind of crazy things, as well as just having immediate answers at their fingertips. So where we used to go to school and our teachers would tell us whatever we were doing in school and we just kind of took it on face value. Okay, I think I'll learn that. Sure, whatever. Now kids are like, why do I have to do that? And I remember even doing that as a kid myself. Why do I have to know this? I'm never going to use it, right? I don't know if you ever had that experience, but I did that. I definitely did. And I think in this age, this information age where things are so readily available at the tip of our fingers within a few seconds, especially now with AI, in addition to everything else. Basically, what's happened is people have lost purpose for what they're doing. Why am I learning this? Why do I have to be here? You know, and there's all this other pressure for, you know, both socially, emotionally, and academically. And just the whole thing with the testing so we can measure it, because if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And that's kind of gone off the rails and people teaching to the test, not because they don't want to be good in education, but because they were getting so much pressure. So there are just a whole lot of changes that have happened in the last few decades in education. And a lot of people feel like it's just never going to be right again. We're never going to be able to be happy in school anymore. And I'm out there saying, you know, beating the drum and screaming as loud as I can. That's not true. We can recreate this. I promise.
So that's really good. So you think explosion of technology, of immediate availability of things, the pressure for measurement and demonstration of effective teaching techniques and test scores and things, all have sort of come together to create a high pressure, low effectiveness situation in education where it's not fun either for the teachers or the students. And consequently, learning goes down because it's not fun. Nobody likes it. Nobody wants to be there. Everybody's worried about.
We had a test, some test scores that came out this year that recorded that we have some of the lowest reading scores that we've ever had on record in this country and in the U.S. And so it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, no, clearly it's not okay. And you're beating the drum loudly and clearly that you have something that allows us to return to some fun, some joy, and sanity to combat that change that's been developing sort of without remediation over some decades. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. And they're also, to be fair, we've also discovered a lot of things in the last couple decades about how our brains, how the human brain develops, functions, and learns. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is we discover these things. It's just like in medicine, the same thing happens. We'll discover something that works and it takes a while for medicine to kind of catch up. Right. And I feel like that's happening in education too, although more and more people are coming to the conclusion that if we teach kids according to how their brains develop, function, and learn and what that looks like, we get much better results and kids are much happier. And it's not like Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill all the time, trying to get them to engage or, you know, deal with their anxiety and all the other things that have been happening. And these things were building before COVID, but I feel like it really, when everybody was shut down for a while and then kids having to go back to school, I really feel like that was part of the crescendo of things getting so much more difficult to the point where, like, we've lost a lot of teachers. A lot of teachers have either retired early or they've left the profession and gone to other professions. And, you know, there are just all kinds of things that are happening right now. And we can recreate it. It is totally doable without piling another curriculum on teachers. Because I feel like a lot of times that's what we end up doing. You know, we have PhDs who have all this great stuff and they give them a whole new curriculum, like for social and emotional learning. So they give them all these resources and the teachers don't even have time to look into the resources and really use them that much.
So we're trying to fix the problem. Yeah, we're trying to fix the problem by inventing new things. And all it's doing is creating an overload on teachers and they haven't had time to use what they have, examine the new stuff, integrate it well, and feeling pressure to use it because somebody somewhere said, this is a good idea, you got to do this now.
Right. And a lot of times districts are paying a lot of money for these, you know, for these programs. So they have to justify it to the school board and all this stuff. So they have pressure to, I mean, it's just like this kind of vicious cycle thing that's going on. And everybody has good intentions. Everybody wants to improve it. Everybody knows that we're struggling in this area. And it's not just, it's private schools as well. It's charter schools as well. It's degrees. There's a bell curve, right? Like everything else in life. But it's happening everywhere. Even homeschooling parents are, you know, struggling with some of these things. So I even work with homeschooling parents and using the practices that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, good. So one other question before we actually get to the grand ideas that you have, that you not only have as ideas, but have some data and practice to demonstrate they're working. So what do you think is you mentioned a couple of times the high levels of anxiety in the kids. Now, I understand teachers feeling like pile on more, do this, do that, do this, try this. Oh, crap, the test scores suck. We got to fix it. This will fix it. Go do this. And sort of overwhelmed with more stuff to do. And so that is easy for me to understand. What do you think is the two or three biggest contributing factors to the anxiety of kids associated with the schooling and education process?
Well, I feel like there's this kind of whole thing in education going on, kind of bigger, stronger, faster, and more intelligent, you know, whereas most of the kids are fine where they are, but some of the traditional things that we've been doing to teach them isn't necessarily working all that well. So in some cases, it's great. Kids are flying. They're doing great. I mean, it's not everyone. But overall, in our schools, we're struggling with anxiety of kids wondering what's going to happen in the future. I go to school. I don't really understand what's going on. We have, you know, tensions between languages, having them, we've been ratcheting up skills for what kids need to learn in certain grades and, you know, that aren't even child developmentally, you know, I mean, there's just been a lot of moving parts that are going on. And anxiety, you know, depression is being upset about what's happened in the past or past experience. Anxiety is being afraid of what's going to happen in the future. And I think a lot of kids are experiencing a lot of fear. And I think a lot of fear has come from various things that are going on in our society. So, and to allay those fears, what we need to do is we need to set up their brains so that they can think. So, that, you know, because a fearful brain can't think because they're stuck in the limbic system. There's no way they're getting into the prefrontal cortex where they can actually store information.
Yeah, let me ask a thing. I had to interview somebody on podcast the other day. It talked about the fear part of the brain and the creative part of the brain, and they separated it really into two parts. And maybe that's an adequate separation, and maybe it's not. But you've referenced that, and, you know, we have 24-hour news cycles, and we have fear-mongering on all of our television, and it's on constantly, and kids are exposed to stuff way too young. Nobody pays attention to the guidelines that are put on movies and TV shows, and I can see how easily it would create this anxiety, especially about the future for the kids. So I'm going to ask you now to talk about these, what you have developed and tested, and I want to tie it to something you said right in the beginning, and that was doing something that makes sense according to the developmental stage that they're at. In other words, not expecting them, you know, to be beyond that. And when we do that, of course, we get disharmony and discord because the body or the brain or whatever isn't that developed. So that's a really important thing you said that I think it's really powerful in the context of what you have. So tell us what you have that will make a dent in this problem.
So basically, we do three things. We do three little practices to prepare kids' brains for learning. So middle school and high school teachers, it takes them like 4 minutes at the beginning of class and saves so much time because the kids are engaged and they can think. And then for elementary school, because they have them all day, if they have the time or they're willing to create the time, if they do 10 minutes of exercise in the morning instead of 90 seconds, they can actually get their brains ready all day because it sets their brains up for working all day. So so we prepare their brains for learning. Then we give their learning purpose, which is key right now in this digital age, absolute key. And I have a super easy way to do that. And I'm so excited about that because that makes such a huge difference in kids. If we know why we're doing something, if we have a purpose for it, if we know how we're going to use this information in our lives, even if it's some kind of algebraic or, you know, something in geometry or whatever in math. And we're just like, how am I ever going to use this? So I have a way to help kids come up with a purpose for their learning, whatever they're doing, and purpose is key. And then giving their brains a chance to process what they learn at the end of the week. So daily.
So let's get in some details. Yeah. So let's go ahead and get into some details. So I understand preparation, purpose, and process are the three things that I heard you say. Preparation to get ready. And, you know, it's so interesting because I run groups, group coaching and that kind of thing. And I just ran a Zoom today. And when people come on calls like that, you have no idea where they've been or what's been going on in the in the 10 seconds, 10 minutes or a couple of hours before. And sort of bringing everybody present and together is so valuable to create both the atmosphere and the attention for each individual. And it's a little bit different on Zoom, but in class, doing that. So the preparation, I can certainly understand. Tell us about preparation. What is that?
So we prepare kids' brains for learning by doing three things. The first thing is they do a little bit of exercise. So it's 90 seconds of exercise for middle school and high school because they don't have a lot of time. They only have the kids for, you know, 50 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes. You know, there are different kinds of schedules that they have, but they'll do it from 90 seconds to 3 minutes. They'll do physical exercise. And I have very simple, really fun little things for middle school and high school kids to do because you have to adjust it for social development. Because at first, when we started doing this with middle school and high school kids, they were like, I don't want to do that. And they were embarrassed and whatever. And so now we have it down. So they do a little bit of exercise. First thing, we remind them to get a drink of water. We have all the kids bring a personalized water bottle from home. If they can't afford one, then we supply one to them. But most kids have a water bottle at home. So they have their name on the water bottle. And we remind them to get a drink of water because our brains are 73% water. So trying to think without hydration is kind of like riding a bike on flat tires, right? We absolutely need that hydration and we don't need a lot, like not guzzling so your whole class is running to the bathroom. I'm talking, which I did in the beginning, by the way. I've learned everything the hard way in my own classroom, but just having them get a little bit of water to kind of wet their whistle and because most of the time kids come to school dehydrated. It's just like when we wake up in the morning and we have to eat something for breakfast because otherwise we're breaking the fast. Otherwise our brains are not doing the kind of thinking that they could be doing. So, but we can't control them eating at home, but we can remind them to get a drink of water and do a little bit of exercise, not enough exercise to make them stinky and smelly, just enough exercise to get their brains in gear, you know, to get their brain chemicals working and their neural pathways firing. And then so a little water, a little exercise, and then we play a brain game. And I have a whole bunch of brain games that we do, and they do different things. Like some of them help improve working memory, for example, which is executive function in the brain. It's short-term memory so that they can, if you've taught them something or you've written something on the board for them to respond to, that they have the memory from the board to the piece of paper. And there was a study done in Oxford that showed that working memory was even more important in school than IQ.
Oh, wow.
So we need that executive function, and a lot of kids are missing that space. So we just play a 90-second game, and it kind of boots their working memory, stimulates that working memory. And then we also, those games also get their mind out of the limbic system. Remember when you were talking about, you don't know what happened to the person, you know, 10 minutes or 2 hours or 30 seconds, whatever, before right. they came into the meeting. So what we do is we play this little game with them. And in playing that game, we get them out of their, if they've got cortisol going on in their mind by 90 seconds, it takes about 90 seconds to replace cortisol with dopamine. So to dissipate the cortisol, the stress, get them out of their, you know, limbic system and their emotion centers and get their brains to relax so they can actually process information in the prefrontal cortex in their brain. So it's just looking at what our brains need. So that's how we prepare their brains. And then after we do the game, then we take three long breaths. And those long breaths are not only great for the brain, but they're also a positive trigger. You know, we always hear about triggers and talk about them negatively, right?
Right.
But taking those three breaths is a positive trigger, like, oh, okay, my brain is ready. Now I'm ready to get to work. Now I can think.
So I'm gonna go through those because I really think this is important. And I invite anyone who's watching today or sees this later to use this process for yourself, whether you're an adult or a kid. Trish is talking about using it in school in a concentrated sort of situation. But what I'm hearing is, gee, I don't know where you've been, but if you move, like if I'm suddenly someone asks me, I do this when I'm talking, everybody stand up and reach for the ceiling or do, you know, some kind of stretch. And what it does is it makes whatever you were thinking about stop, because I can't do whatever you're telling me to do, stretch out, stretch up, you know, wiggle my shoulders, whatever it is. I can't do that and think about whatever I was thinking about. So I'm switched to a new place. I'm here now doing this thing and a little water to make sure the brain's working. And then this a brain game is just creating this working memory connection that you're talking about. And I think of breathing, I guess because I do a lot of meditation, teaching and practice, is just sort of this centering process where you've done this, that, and the other, and you're back here, and okay, sit down and let's get to it kind of feeling. Am I saying that right?
You're saying it right. And so for the middle and high school kids, it takes 4 minutes to do all three of these practices, to do a little exercise, get a drink of water, play a little brain game, and do three deep breaths. For the elementary school teachers, they can do the same thing, but I encourage them to do 10 minutes of exercise because the studies show that 10 minutes of exercise sets up the brain for thinking for 4 hours. But kids are playing, you know, elementary school kids, they're going to recess and playing after lunch and that kind of thing. So it really sets them up for the entire day if they do that 10 minutes of exercise. But the point is water, exercise, do a little brain game, deep breaths. Doing that little bit of preparation makes just a huge difference in how well they pay attention, how well they can think, how well they can process what you're talking about.
So what that tells me is if I do that kind of thing and I bring the students present and do a few things that physiologically, you know, and have seen, you know, set that up, that the 4 minutes you lost or even the 10 minutes you, quote, lost is way, way, way more than gained back in attention, focus, ability to remember and be present. So even in a 50-minute class, I know some are longer, but a 50-minute class, if I take 5 minutes even to do that, and, oh, I only have 45 minutes left, I'm going to do a lot better with the kids in that 45 minutes than I would have in 50 with no preparation. And I'm saying that because the first thing people say when you start to do something is, I don't have time. And the answer
is, I don't have time. I've had several teachers tell me, I don't have time to do one more thing. And I say to them, do you not understand that if you do this, it'll take you a little bit to learn it, but just a couple of weeks. And then you're going to hand all these practices off to the kids. They will be responsible to do it. And it gives them agency for their learning. And they're going to take turns, all of them in the classroom. So the shy kids come out of their shells and the kind of kids that poke fun at other people, they're going to have to be up in front of the class and do these things too. So suddenly they learn to become much more supportive. So it creates this whole social and emotional growth experience as well. It creates this whole supportive community in the classroom, which makes it so much more fun for the teacher. I mean, I discovered all this stuff because I had this really difficult class and I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to get through this week, much less through the rest of the year? And then basically what happened was my own kids had challenges. So I had already been doing all this research on brain, you know, how our brains work. And I thought, you know, it's working with my quirky kids. I wonder how it'll work in a classroom. And it was amazing.
So you brought in another whole dimension, which is having the kids take responsibility, the benefit of them personally owning it. And it's not sort of top down thing. They own it. And then you rotate it, which creates some sense of community and shared learning and responsibility. So that's an entirely different level of benefit beyond just the individual physiological and mental preparation for the activity. So, and I don't doubt that. And I hadn't even thought about, even though you told me this before, about the responsibility of kids doing that. And I can see easily how that would work. And, you know, the first couple of times some shy person may or may not, whatever, but after everybody's kind of doing it, then, you know, they'll be able to do it and we'll be glad.
And not only that, the other kids encourage them. They'll say things like, oh my gosh, I know I was so nervous too, but you can totally do this. I mean, it's, it's really cute what happens. And in different ages, just the language changes from from little teeny kid. Actually, the little kids are much better about doing it and jumping in, even the shy kids, and trying it. the middle school and high school kids have a little bit more trouble because they're so worried about what other people are going to think. But when they realize they're all in the same boat, that they're all going to have a chance to do this, and then they're, and you start with your leaders in the classroom anyway, because you're learning as you're doing the practices at the beginning of the school year who your leaders are. So they're the ones who start leading. But I wanted to say you're preparing their brains for learning. That's the first set of practices. But the next, the fourth practice that's really important is giving their learning purpose. And we use AI to do that because I figure, you know, AI is here to stay, right? It's not going anywhere.
No question.
And I feel like a lot of people are nervous about using AI in their classroom because maybe kids will cheat with it. But, you know, AI, you can tell if something has been done by AI versus a kid, if they're writing a report or whatever. But using AI and putting in a prompt, and I even have a really simple prompt for them to use, you know, please list 10 to 15 ways, whatever age child you're working on, an 8-year-old child in third grade or a 15-year-old youth in a sophomore in high school. So you just fill it in whatever you're teaching, can use this, whatever concept you're teaching, skill in their life. And the, and it just, within a few seconds, it spits out 10 to 15 ways they can use it. And the teachers are usually as shocked as the students going, whoa, I had no idea this thing I was teaching could do all these great things. And they go through the list together. And they do this at the beginning of the week. They go through the list together for the different things that they're teaching. And it's quick because once you do it a couple of times, it's really easy to do. And you just put in whatever they're learning, and then the kids get to go through it and choose what resonates with them. We say, pick a couple of things. I mean, you potentially can get all these benefits, but pick one or two things that sounds the most important to you that you might be able to get from learning this thing that we're learning. So then they actually have a reason to learn. They have their own why for why they're learning something. So what happens in the brain is they're learning in context. Instead of just we're presenting stuff to them that they have to figure out how to do and regurgitate or whatever. And that's not what they're doing. They're applying it to the purpose for why they're learning it in the first place. So they get much more depth of learning because they're thinking about how they're going to use what they're learning. And they remember what they're learning. So they apply it to different things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I remember a very specific example of that. There was a time many years ago when I was taking third semester physics in a college, and I was also working at a job. And who cares what it was? You know, physics, right? Some complicated stuff. And I was thinking, I wonder when you'd ever use that. And then I went to work, and there was a guy there who had a trailer, and he was figuring out how to calculate the tongue weight on his truck so he could know how long to make this, that, and the other. And suddenly I realized the things that I had learned in this particular class called statics, which is a certain branch of physics, would solve that problem. And all of a sudden, I sat down and I figured it out for him and told him the answer. And it was like, wow, there's a thing. What do you know?
Yeah, there's a reason to learn this crazy stuff.
Yeah. So that just landed with me when you said that. And the fact that AI can spit out 15 reasons for an 8-year-old to learn whatever it is, I love it.
Or any age. I mean, any age. And it's so simple the way I have it set up in the AI that because I set it up this way so that kids can take over the process, right? So that kids can take over the practices. And
do they have a big screen like where everybody can see it? Or
yes, almost always now in the classrooms, they almost always have screens so they can put it up on the screen. They have their laptop or whatever they're using. And they hook it up to the screen. So it all just shows up on the screen. They read it together. And the teacher says, okay, pick a couple. We're going to go through these and be thinking of the one or two, you know, write down a word or two to remember which ones that you want to choose and think about what you want to choose to make this your purpose, your reason, your why for learning whatever we're working on. So that when we're doing this, you know that you're not learning this for me. You're learning this for you. you're going to use a lot of these things that we're learning in your life. And you may not have any idea, just like you had no idea you were learning this stuff in calculus and you would be able to apply it at work the same day, right? Who knew? So we never know when these things are going to come up. But if we're learning with the eye towards, I'm going to be able to use this, and this is a possibility for how I might do this, then when those things come up in our lives, we recognize it and go, oh my gosh, you know, it's a good thing I went to school today.
You know, I can see another thing too, is this is about the sort of the locus of concentration, because when you're like, you have changed that in the beginning with the preparatory exercises. And then when you jointly together create this purpose, instead of them, anyone thinking about this is useless or what am I going to do with this or any of that, suddenly there's a place of concentration. So it's like in meditation, when you focus on the breath or something, you've changed the game already just by creating a place of concentration. They're thinking about finding a reason for them. It's a whole different process than trying to get engaged or not get engaged. It's a different, you're in a completely different place. So every day you do the brain prep. Once a week you do the purpose based on the topics you're covering in that class.
Well, once a week
class.
Or whenever new topics come up. I mean, that's up to the teacher. I just, you know, that's a rough thing. Some teachers do it for every, you know, even in elementary school, when they get really good at the purpose, putting them in the AI engines and spitting it out and doing that with the kids quickly. Because after you do it a few times, you can do it very quickly. So once they get used to that, then, you know, some of them do it way more. But I start them with doing it once a week at the beginning of the week. You're introducing something new. So to help kids define a purpose for what they're learning, help students, whatever their age, you know, come up with a why that resonates with them for whatever they're going to learn. And then the last practice is by the end of the week, you say, okay, what I want you to think about now is, what did you learn and how are you going to use it in your life? So it's prepare, purpose, process. By giving the brain an opportunity to process what they learned, that's what gives it sticking power, because they've learned it in context. Then after, so we set the timer for like 5 minutes. It depends on the age group and the teacher, whatever. But we set the timer for like 5 minutes. They write in their journal, this is what I learned. This is how I'm going to use it. Little kids, they may just sit and think, or they may just brainstorm out loud together. You know, so we make it different depending on the age group of the kids. But they decide what they learned and how they're going to use it. Then the timer goes off. And then they get a partner, and we encourage them to get a different partner each time, so they get to know everyone in the classroom. And they share, they take turns sharing with their partner what they learned. So you hear kids around the room going, in the beginning, you hear kids around the room going, oh, I didn't even think of that. I'm going to add that to my journal. And then you'll hear a kid go, you can't add that to your journal. That was my idea. And we'll say, and then I will laugh, and I encourage the teachers to laugh and say, you know what, would you agree that we need good leaders in our world? And oh yeah, we need good leaders. Okay. So my goal, my vision for all of you people in my class is that you have the potential to be a powerful, positive leader. And literally what being a leader is somebody noticing your idea, somebody noticing something you're doing, your vision, your idea, whatever it was, and they want to follow it. They want to do the same thing because it's a good idea. And then they go, oh, okay, you can write that in your journal.
Right.
I mean, it's very cute, the transition. And we encourage them, look, if you hear a good idea by somebody, by your partner today, add it to your journal, because you know, that'll put it forefront in your mind too. Oh yeah, I forgot that we learned that. I'm going to add that to my journal. Or you're right, I could use that in this way too. I'm going to put that in my journal. So they're actually processing what they're learning, and it stores it differently in their way. And it incorporates the limbic system, both purpose and process, stir up an emotional, you know, excitement about what they're learning and that they're going to use it and how they're using it and whatever. And so it stores it differently in the brain, so it's easier to access. So you're not having to teach things, you know, 45 times, because the kids remember the processes because they remember it in context, and they remember it in a social, you know, setting, as well as just the context of learning something. Even if they've been sitting around figuring out math problems, when they're talking about the math problems and how they're using it and they're sharing it with each other, it stores it more solidly in the brain so that they can retrieve it. One, so they can retrieve it, but also so that they can apply what they learn to other things that they're learning.
It seems like at the end here, you know, in the beginning when kids start leading it, and at the end you're creating another social element, which is another positive reinforcement. You talk about teachers saying they don't have time to do another curriculum. This isn't a curriculum. This is just some things to do. So I want you to talk about what barriers, and I understand the idea of don't talk to me at one more thing. If you say one more thing, just hearing it's going to break my camel, you know, that sort of thing. Just
right?
hearing this is going to break my camel. You're going to break my brain, even if you say it. No, you can't say it. So I want you to tell us what barriers, what you're doing, what barriers have you run into, and tell me about the successes you've had. What are you doing to get this in there? Because this doesn't strike me. When I hear curriculum, I don't know. I just have this other picture of like a bunch of stuff. And this doesn't sound like that to me. So what's going on?
Specifically designed so that it's not a curriculum. So it's just practices to put in the classroom. And in the beginning, it takes a little more time just because it's something that's new. So it takes some more intentional concentration just to do it. But within a few weeks, you're handing it off to the kids and you're supporting the kids in doing it, which is actually fun.
Yeah.
And then more and more, they take more responsibility. And when it's their turn to do stuff, I will say that sometimes a few kids have gotten anxious about it. So you have to support them a little more or ask their parents to help them a little more. Sometimes what I would do is ask other kids in the classroom, you know, and I'll say, is there anybody in here who's willing to help so-and-so with this project? Because they seem really nervous about it. And, you know, is there anybody who's done it so far that thinks that they could help so-and-so? So it's this kind of cohesive thing that they're working together. And it's not, so it's just learning how to support other people, how to help other people without being like, you know, comparing, oh, I'm better than you, whatever. And we kind of go through that whole thing too.
So your goal, I'm going to say this, you can correct me if you're wrong, is every class, first grade through 12th, learn to do this, adapt it, and create this preparation purpose process framework for teaching the curricula that they have. This is a preparatory activity to make the application and learning of the curricula faster, better, and to stick in their brains more and be more useful. And so your goal is to get that in every class 1 through 12, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Everywhere I can.
So tell me what has happened so far. What has been the difficulties? And what are you doing now? And what could anybody here who might be listening do to help?
So what I'm looking for right now is that, so I've been working with small groups of teachers so far, and they've been filling out weekly input forms, just little Google forms, and letting me know how it's going in their classroom and what's working, what they're having trouble with. That's how we've learned how to modify the practices for different age groups. We're learning a lot in this whole process with these small groups of teachers. So I've just started this year because I did it in my classroom. Then I gave a talk at TEDx Wilmington in Delaware. And people said, Trish, you got to actually do this with people. I mean, this is something that could really make a difference. So yeah. I just started doing this and we're getting great. You know, I had one teacher tell me, a high school teacher, high school math. She said, I've had more fun teaching this year. I've been teaching 20 plus years and I've had more fun teaching this fall semester than I've ever had in my life. and which was quite an endorsement. She said, my kids are learning. They're more engaged. We just have such a better like sense of humor about things. There's just more positive energy in the classroom. It's, you know, and so, and it was something that she didn't have before. And for elementary school, I had an elementary school teacher tell me, you know, it's funny because I invited all of my other friends in my school to do this with me because I told them, you know, I'm doing this kind of pilot research project thing. Would you like to join us? And she said, I couldn't get anyone else to join me. And she said, so they're all complaining in the staff room how they're, the kids are distracted. They're having a hard time getting them engaged in what they're doing. And she said, I'm just sitting there smiling. And they're like, why are you smiling? And she's like, I've been doing this thing I told you about at the beginning of the year. I don't have any problem getting them engaged anymore. It's just not even a thing. Like the kids are just engaged. It's not even, I don't even think about it anymore. So you're talking about it in the classroom and I'm remembering how frustrated I was even, you know, last year. And I just, so did it's they not go, an issue for me
did
anymore.
Did any of them then take her up on learning what she was doing or not?
So a lot of them said, well, I just can't do one more thing. And she said, but it saves time. So you were asking me what the barrier is.
Yeah.
The barrier has been getting, what I'm looking for is three whole schools that are willing to take a chance on this and do this with me. It's a 12-week program, so they get lots of support, but not a lot of obligation. Their only obligation is to fill out a two to five minute form if they want to add more stuff. But if they just want to answer the questions, it's a 2 to 5 minute form once a week just to let me know where they are and how they're doing. And if they have any issues, then they contact me and we troubleshoot together. So, so they get ongoing support for 12 weeks. And that form is kind of like their version of processing. How did I do this week? What did it look like? What could I do differently to make this work better? So it's really not a huge undertaking once people get into it, but it's getting past that barrier of I can't do one more thing. Because you're right,
anything,
it's not a curriculum.
No, it's not. Is there anything, I mean, I see these really, this interactive social intelligence, you know, community sort of benefits at the front end and the back end of the processes that you've described. And even in the middle, the process or the purpose part too, if kids take turns and do that, is there any stuff that they can quit doing because this provides peripheral social and other benefits that there is a curriculum for trying to teach?
Well, so what happens is because they're doing these three, the prepare, purpose, process, so their brains are ready to do all this and it's doing some social and emotional learning. Anyway, what it does is it creates the environment to naturally have a lot of the curricula for social and emotional learning. If the teachers are familiar with it at all, they can just organically plug things in there wherever without having to do all the planning because it's just stuff that comes up. Just like when you went to work and you were like, wow, this guy is trying to figure this out and I know how to do that. And
yeah, that's kind exactly.
Of, right? And it's kind of what happens in the classroom. The social and emotional learning is already developing. They're already creating this classroom of instead of just constant competition, they're learning how they can put their heads together and they can actually have a synergistic relationship where they're learning better, more, faster, in more depth, just all of it. And they're having fun when they work together. Instead
so
of,
does that mean one of the some of the curricula become easier
and
more
so
integrated
much easier.
as opposed to you can't really delete any because they're quote supposed to be there, but it's easier and faster. So there is a peripheral benefit.
And things just naturally get integrated. I mean,
yeah.
they start just noticing where things are integrated. Another thing I used to do with my own class that I encourage teachers to do is when kids notice that they've done something like you at work, you know, when they notice they've done something that has something to do with what they learned in class, that they come in and raise their hand and let us know, oh, I just used this thing that we learned at the grocery store. Or remember when we learned how to write letters to, you know, write a letter? Well, I just wrote my grandmother a thank you note or a thank you email or whatever. And they would bring this in and let us know that they were doing these things. And it was, you know, so, and we'd give them kudos. For me, what I did is we had running sticks because we had a running program and they get a free stick. Each stick was like a fifth of a mile. and they would get a free stick for coming in and reporting, you know, so it wasn't like a big cheat or whatever on their mind, but it was a real tangible reward. It was not only the physical stick to add towards their next mile, but it was also a physical, tangible thing that didn't cost me anything because we recycled and reused the sticks all the time. So I didn't, as a teacher, I didn't have to pay for anything or.
Right. So I want to make sure we get to what do you need from people? I know you said you need three schools to do this. How do people find out more? Because we've got 5 minutes left. So how do people find out more? How do they do something if they're excited about this, not only for school or otherwise? What do we do next?
What you do next is you go to thebrainstages.com and you go to the Empowered School tab. The project is called the Empowered School Project. So they just go to thebrainstages.com and all the stuff is on there and they can contact me. My email is trish@thebrainstages.com. So it's really simple. And my phone number, I think, is even on there. I mean, I just want to get this out there. I haven't even been charging to do it yet because I'm still collecting data. So this is actually a really good time. If you're a teacher, you're a parent, and you would like this to be in your kid's school, because it's much easier to talk to administrators when they're, I already have a connection at the school. So that's, I need to get past the few teachers and have some whole schools. And if there are a couple of teachers who really don't want to do it, they can be the control group.
That's a good way to think about it too, because just like you had in that lounge where the one teacher was like sitting, you know, cruising because that was better for them, and the others were having the usual level of frustration and complaint. Okay, well, that is fantastic. So thebrainstages.com, trish@thebrainstages.com. And if this process sounds interesting to you, learn about it and go talk to Trish and see what you can do to level up education in school. So what else didn't I ask you that you'd like to talk about for a minute?
I want people to know that if they're raising children or they have grandchildren or whatever the case may be, our brains are highly plastic. The plasticity, there are all kinds of things that we can do to create it so that kids learn on a level. We just need to figure out how their brains work. And for example, my kids were really bright, but they had attention issues, and one had auditory processing problems. They had issues, right? But we just figured, in accordance to how their brains work. Now I'm working with my grandnephew, and we write, and so he has a lot of trouble writing. So we write in salt on a cookie sheet. In other words, I want people to know that even if the kids in your life have challenges with their learning, there is always a solution. There is always a way that we can work with them to get their needs met. It's not, I mean, we look at some of these things as being so impossible, and it's just not.
I have to say, you know, this is the second time I've had the opportunity, the real opportunity, to hear you elaborate on this and understand what you're doing, how powerful it is, how applicable. I mean, you're talking about schools, but, you know, families and relatives and all kinds of places where just the simple ideas of preparation, purpose, and process to make it relevant and connected.
Oh my gosh, Kellen, I did one of these presentations for a bunch of parents, and I had a dad come back to me and say, you know what? I did this prepare, purpose, process thing with my staff. I could not believe they were not only so much happier, but I got so much more production out of them. It was amazing. So now I do it. Now I do it with my staff at work.
All right. That's exactly my point. And that is, you've described it in the context of 1 through 12 or K-12 school. But this process is true and would be useful all across the spectrum. Trish, we're running out of time. I want to thank you for sharing your wisdom. Your enthusiasm is contagious. Anybody that's listening to this that has an idea for it, please go to thebrainstages.com. Let's see if we can help Trish make some things happen. Thanks for being with me today.
And thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure, Kellen.
I want you to take some minutes. Go back and listen to this. There's some ideas that will help you, your staff, your kids, your work. And this idea of prepare, purpose, process, you can change the words if you like, matters. And it is something that I can attest to because I do it in preparation and execution of my own work, coaching, writing books, and everything else. I can tell you that it's valuable and it will help you if you choose to use these ideas as you move forward to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.